Welcome to BIC Magazine's Inside Industry Podcast, the program where business and industry connect to share topics and ideas that move the world's energy. BIC Magazine's Inside Industry Podcast is brought to you by the BIC Alliance. BIC Alliance and its sister companies, BIC Magazine, BIC Recruiting, and IVS Investment Banking, help industrial businesses grow through marketing and sales, hiring the right people, and merger and acquisition services. Visit BICalliance.com for more information.
Hey, y'all, it's Jeremy Osterberger here with BIC Magazine. I am so excited to be here with Carrie Siggins. She's the CEO of Stone Age, which, for folks that don't know, is a leading global high-pressure industrial cleaning equipment manufacturer. She's also on the board at the Water Jet Technology Association, which many of our audience members know. But today, we're talking leadership with Carrie because she's releasing a new book, The Ownership Mindset, a handbook for transforming your life and leadership. Carrie, welcome in.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad to be here. I've been looking forward to this for weeks.
I am so glad you said that. I'm so glad you're here. And I haven't seen you in a little while physically. Saw you at a coffee shop, like, I don't know, a couple months or so ago.
Randomly running into each other at a Starbucks.
Look, it's addictive. I have to admit, the dark roast. I don't know. I'm a simple guy. Just dark roast black. I don't know. What do you go with? What's your weapon of choice?
I cut out caffeine about 3 years ago. So I was doing decaf and now I've cut out coffee. So now I'm doing matcha tea lattes. So I love Starbucks matcha. So I'm still in there all the time.
Probably once or twice this fall, I'll grab one of those pumpkin spice, whatever those things are. Those are crazy.
Yeah, they're good.
Like 15,000 calories in a cup. So
pretty much not good for you, but they taste so good.
Amazing. So Carrie, you know, when I read your book, the first thing that stood out to me is, similar interests. You know, you have a background in sports, softball. I played baseball my whole life. And, when I thought about my sports background, and I kind of didn't even know it at the time, but I felt like I was gaining leadership through baseball. I always played catcher, probably because I was heavy and slow, but also because I was kind of the coach on the field, right? And so when I read your book, I just kept thinking, like, what was, like, sort of the origin of your leadership, and we'll get into a moment here, but also I kept thinking, when did I start becoming a leader? You know what I mean? Is a leader born? Is it learned? Are you put in situations that kind of force you into leadership? Maybe it's kind of all the above. So I just wanted to say thank you for generating that thought in my brain. And other things that connect the two of us are your passion for cycling, mountain biking, Peloton. I don't have a Peloton, but certainly love cycling.
You have to get one.
Look, I like going on a bike ride and, like, you know, 20, 30 miles in, like, I'm in that Zen moment. I'm like contemplating the meaning of life and all those great things. Like, I don't know about you, but, like, I go ride and I come back and I'm like, wait a minute, what did I just do for 2 hours? You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. I do. I'm there. It's my favorite. My mountain biking is my jam. I just, in fact, invested, because I have to look at it since bikes are now price of cars, in a new mountain bike. And so I love to get out on it, and I do the same thing. I actually listen to books, or podcasts while I ride. So it's my way to consume more leadership knowledge, more business knowledge, or just something fun. But I get into that Zen moment and I'm thinking and I'm listening and I'm just trying to ride downhill as fast as I possibly can.
That's awesome. And then the other thing I thought about here is you and I are in similar parental journey position. Like, I've got an 11-year-old, a 9 and a 6. I think your kid Jack is somewhere around that 11-year-old age. So
cool. Yep, he is.
So awesome. So Carrie, let's get into a little bit. You know, the ownership mindset is a handbook, right? And in part one, you talk about taking ownership, which I think any manager and leader wants to build trust in their staff so that they take more ownership, right? And you talk about three fundamental values for being a great teammate, practicing self-leadership, and you talked a little bit about those defining leadership values. You know, I want to get into that a little bit more. Like, when we practice self-leadership, and you talked about Stone Age's assurance promise, right? Which I think has a lot to do with that on the business side. But, you know, can you define self-leadership? You know, what are those aspects of self-leadership that, that are a key point to your book and your message?
So Self-leadership is quite simply how you lead yourself. And I never was familiar with that term until my mom basically told me I was a poor self-leader and I couldn't lead other people well unless I figured out how to lead myself well. And I loved that concept because let's face it, we're leading ourselves every day, whether we're doing it well or whether we're doing it poorly. And so once I started to understand this concept, I was like, I want to be a great self-leader. And so how I define self-leadership is really through how you show up, what your attitude is, what your mindset is, how you build relationships, how you take responsibility for your mistakes, right? Creating accountability, how you take care of yourself, right? Personal well-being, all of the life that we live and how we show up in those relationships that we have and how we relate to the work that we do and how we give back to our communities is how we lead yourself. So those are kind of the foundation of everything in my opinion is it's got to start with self-leadership. If you want to be a great leader, people leader, then you need to be able to hold yourself accountable to being a great self-leader.
That's right. And Carrie, you know, digging a little further into leading yourself, you talked about how mastery of a craft or mastery of a job leads to a sense of purpose. I think it was Michael Phelps said, an expert is someone who's done something for 10,000 hours, right? You want your employees to feel that they're the best at what they do, and then they know they own it. Right. You know what I mean? I thought that was a good point. Yeah. I think we think that, but the way you talked about it was a little bit different. How do leaders go about helping team members apply like their passions and a sense of purpose, you know, into their jobs? It's not an easy thing.
Well, no, and it's incredibly unique, right? Every person's purpose and how they find meaning in work is different. And I think it depends also on where they are in their careers. I have found, and I think that many people who really truly find purpose and meaning in their work have found that they have that because they're good at it, right? Because they've spent a lot of time practicing it and putting in the reps and going through ups and downs to be able to, I don't know, expand that competency zone to get better at it. And so I always tell people that if you want to find purpose in your work, find something that you're interested in, yes, but then get really, really good at it. That's where you're like, yes, I'm an expert and I have this deep knowledge and I'm doing something that I care deeply about. So purpose isn't this thing of like, ooh, I've got to go do all these different jobs to go find my purpose. No, find something that you like and you enjoy doing it and then get really good at it. That's how you find purpose in work. And so how leaders can help their employees do that is to one, make sure that they're having regular conversations so that they understand, you know, goals, dreams, passions, skills, strengths, so they can help align that person's job with those talents that they have, and then give them opportunities to grow and stretch and practice. And that is how people will find more meaning in their work. And there's a lot of other things there, but in terms of coming around, in terms of the point of mastery, that's really it. Like, you've got to put in the reps and you've got to decide, I want to be really good at that. It's like mountain biking, right? Mountain biking is definitely part of my purpose. When I learned how to mountain bike, it sucked. I crashed and fell and hurt myself so many times. And I was like, I'm going to give up because this is hard. But every time I just found like, you know what though, but I feel so good when I do it, even if I have to go, you know, get dirt out of my scrape afterwards. And the next thing I know is that it got easier when I got better at it. And then it got a little bit easier when I got better at it. Then I learned how to ride technical rocks and I got better at it. And the next thing you know, it's my passion. Work is the same exact way.
Yeah. And it's funny, just to add to your comment, it seems to me like a lot of folks think of purpose almost like it's a unicorn, or like they go into the woods with a flashlight searching for it. And then I thought about something that's a little bit unfair. Like for me at BIC, I was a journalism major. I'll get into curiosity a little later. You talked a lot about curiosity. I was always a curious person. And so for me, BIC, how do I say this? It was probably easy for me to find a purpose through BIC because I'm in media, I like journalism. And I thought about other employees, like, are we giving them an opportunity to find their purpose through BIC, right? For me, it was easier. It was already something I loved, right? And there were certain aspects of our business I didn't know, but, you know, it was pretty easy for me to bridge it over. So I think that that's something I need to think about, right? And I think that anyone listening to this conversation should think about what team members in their company, it's a little tougher for them, you know what I mean? To establish or apply a purpose. But I love the thought of like, it isn't some pot at the end of a rainbow. It's like, it's within you, right? And you have to kind of apply it to your surrounding, right? You know what I mean? I thought that's a different way of thinking about it. I don't know if folks
can all apply, you know? Absolutely. Well, and especially like you think about this industry, I did not ever expect to spend my entire career in industrial and cleaning. In fact, I would have thought I was doing something much more glamorous than industrial cleaning. And even though I love this industry and I love what we do, and it's such an important part of keeping the supply chain running, right? That wasn't what made it interesting to me at first. It was that I got to do things that were aligned with my strengths. And so some of my strengths are, you know, relating with people, being curious, asking questions, organizing groups of people to get them to move forward and take action. And so when I got to do that in my job, then I started to care more about the company and the industry. And now I can't even imagine being anywhere else but Stone Age, anywhere else in industrial cleaning. But that's not like just going to happen like that. It took me really figuring out, what am I good at? How do I get to do more of that so that I feel really engaged in my work? And then that passion grows. And I'm such a huge advocate for this industry and really trying to do my part to make it safer and more efficient and more effective because of that little spark that I had with, ooh, I get to come to work every day and do something I'm good at. And that feels really good. So it doesn't have to be an industry, right? It can just be the tasks that you do and making sure that there's alignment with goals and strengths so that you feel like you're building upon things that you're good at rather than focusing on the things that you're not so good at or that you don't like doing, which will only ever make you mediocre and certainly not feel purpose.
Yeah, no, great point, Carrie. And I think for your team at Stone Age, knowing that every day they're doing something that's could be saving a life, at least reducing injuries. I mean, you're automating a pretty dangerous industry historically, right? And so I find that, that should be a little easier for everyone to understand that value, you know?
Yep, exactly.
So Carrie, I want to get into curiosity. I've always been like that. When I read your book, I'm like, man, we're so similar in this way. Like I have always been, I'm curious today. My kid was like, Dad, what makes a sonic boom? And I'm like, I have an idea, but let's look it up. You know what I mean? And it's like, and with everything at our fingertips now to be able to, like, my parents could just lie to me and then I'd be like, oh, okay. You know, but now as a parent, I can't lie anymore. My kids are going to bust me every time, you know, like we are screwed, Carrie. We've got to be honest. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, so, you know, but that curiosity is important. Why is curiosity in a leader just so important?
You cannot be empathetic. You cannot scale a business. You cannot understand your customers and their problems if you are not curious. And I have worked with a lot of people who aren't curious. And quite frankly, none of them have made it very far in Stone Age. If you are not interested in how the world works and how people work and how the problem that you're trying to solve is really important to your strategy and understanding your customers, it's really tough to find success and to find that purpose and meaning. And so curiosity is one of the most important traits of any successful leader. You have to ask questions. You have to wonder, is there a better way to do this? Or why have we always done it this way? Is there a better way? Maybe I should learn a little bit more. And so uncurious leaders tend to not be very empathetic and tend to not get very far because if you're not interested in how the world works around you, how are you going to develop solutions that solve those problems?
Right. And then intelligence gathering, and you mentioned anticipating problems in your book, man, that's a big piece of it. Right. I mean, it's, we don't have a crystal ball, but if you can ask the right questions, be curious, you can get better at anticipating problems upcoming. So.
Yeah. I call it peering around the corner. And I think it's a really important thing, especially for CEOs to be able to do, is how do you peer around that corner? And, you know, you do it by reading lots of different industry publications, reading leadership books, reading business books, talking to people within your industry, all of those things. And then, you know, when you start to say, okay, how does all of this go together? It allows you to actually kind of predict, like, I think these are the things that are going to happen. And even more important, rather than just letting them play out, how do I actually start to orchestrate an outcome where I can make a bigger impact in my industry? And that's what curiosity leads to, is that ability to make better decisions about your future.
And so we talked a little bit, Carrie, about maybe our background in sports and, you know, I know for me, that was where I really found myself as a leader. I didn't even know it, right? 11, 12 years old when I was telling my coach, hey, pull this pitcher out. He's not pitching well today. You know, I was already developing my leadership, you know, and they were my best friends. So then in the next game, I had their back. But in that moment, it was about the team, right? That's where I developed myself as a leader on the baseball field. For you, can you define like an origin of your curiosity? You know what I mean? You remember being little and being fascinated by that? Did it come later? You mentioned being involved in like your high school newspaper. You enjoyed kind of this kind of, you know, journalism feel, right? Even then, that tells me you had some of that obviously in high school. But what is the origin of that curiosity for you?
My mother would say I came out of the womb that way.
Yep.
She's like, by the time you were 2 years old, you were orchestrating, you know, family events and what we were doing. And she was like, it was pretty hard to be able to get you to do something different. So we kind of just went along with it. So I don't know, maybe she created a monster, but
gotcha.
I think always from the time that I was really young, I always knew what I wanted. And I had the ability to ask for it in a way that made people feel like, yeah, this is good. This is a good idea. Let's do this. And so I think part of that was, you know, my personality that I was born with. But when I really started to understand that I was a leader, it was definitely when I started playing sports, particularly softball, because that was my passion. I played sports. I played volleyball and basketball and soccer, but you know, they didn't feed my soul like softball did. And so when I started playing softball, I really stepped it up because I wanted to win and I wanted to help my teammates grow. And you have to work together strategically so much in a game like softball or baseball. So that's when I really started to hone it, when I started to figure out like, oh, like this is what leadership really is.
That's right. What was your position in softball? What'd you play?
I played shortstop in college and center field in high school and center field in college.
All right, so you had a little speed there, Carrie. Had to.
Yeah, I know. People don't expect it, but I'm quick. I'm still quick, even though I'm about to be 45 years old.
You got good height. You got good height too. You're probably a pretty good center fielder out there.
5'8". Yeah, yeah. Well, and I can hit both left and right-handed. And so I, you know, we play new teams, and no one would ever really know what to expect from me. Wow. Sometimes I would just do like, you know, a drag bunt, and no one would be expecting it because they think I'm going to get up there and hit.
If you can successfully drag bunt from a left-handed in softball, you're on base. That's pretty tough to defend.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's hard to defend, especially if you're quick. Yep.
No questions. Not like me, slow, but I could slap a baseball to the fence. I could barely make it the second. You know what I mean? It was like, I was probably sliding in the second, you know, it's like there were no triples. There were no triples for me. Didn't happen.
I love that for you. That's so awesome.
Right. But hey, I had a gun for an arm, just telling you. So Carrie, you break down types of leaders in your book. You talk about visionary leaders, managerial leaders, and strategic leaders. You know, I was thinking about, okay, well, where am I at? You know, I don't know. I guess I'd like to think I'm a strategic leader who's still on the way. I'm, you know, right. But, you know, you named mentors in your book as well. You know, how does a mentor or a leader maybe bridge maybe their natural tendency to be a visionary or managerial into strategic? I think the strategic level leader does take development. I don't think you're born with that. You know what I mean? So like, but you may have, you know, a tendency to be more visionary or maybe a more managerial leader. I guess my question is, right, like, how did that come together for you?
Sure. Yeah, I agree. I don't think that there are very many leaders who start out strategic. So visionary leader are those ones who have the bold vision, but don't necessarily care about the plan that you put in place. And managerial leaders are much more about the plan and making sure everything gets done, but they don't have that vision. And a strategic leader is the leader who can combine those two. And that absolutely takes development. And I think that it comes with a combination of experience and absolute mentorship, but most importantly, making mistakes. Being a visionary leader, I definitely had very disruptive ideas, and we put a lot of them into fruition. But early on, when I didn't understand the value of a plan, it felt sometimes like we would be changing directions too fast, or that we didn't always finish well because we were on to the next thing. And that's really demotivating for people. And I had to learn that mistake several times before I was like, you know what? No more new ideas. We are going to execute on this new plan. And I'm only going to bring in new ideas when they really, really, truly fit the strategy. And I wouldn't have done that without a ton of mistakes. And those mistakes, you know, coming back, my board would talk to me about it. Like they would give me feedback, like, you know, you're trying to do too many things here. And it can feel very disruptive and disjointed to the team. And that stung, but it was true. So I think it's that combination of making mistakes, experience, and having people tell you like, maybe there's a better way to do this is what helps you become more strategic.
That's right. No, I appreciate that, Carrie, for speaking about that. You know, above all, you know, what I value most in a leader, and I hope I'm this way for you know, our team members, is humility, right? And, you know, you quoted C.S. Lewis, incredible. I mean, my gosh, one of the greatest writers of all time. He says that humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less. You know, why is humility paramount to lead people?
I mean, I think you could just look around us today at so much poor leadership. And I think much of it comes from leaders thinking about themselves. And I think that the way that we've structured, you know, compensation, all of these different things, it forces people to think about themselves. And you have to really fight against that. I mean, humans have a natural tendency for self-preservation. And when we have reward systems that are put into place that feed into that, it's really hard to not be humble. But you cannot get people to follow you, especially to do disruptive things like Stone Age is doing, if they don't know that you care about them more than you care about yourself. And that's where humility comes into play. It's like, I care about you. That's why we're an employee-owned company, is that we want everybody to share in the success. Like their success means so much more to me than my success. And humility is what really brings people along. It's like, I want to work for that person. So if a leader is, I make no mistakes, I do no wrong, listen to me, you know, and I get paid for it, it's really, really hard to have employees who will follow you to the end and earth and back. And to me, that's far more rewarding and important. And so that's why I think being a humble leader really matters. And it doesn't mean that you don't have to have self-confidence. In fact, to be a great leader, you do have to have self-confidence. But it's also being willing to say, I make mistakes. I'm not perfect. I don't have all the answers. I trust you to make this decision. Those are all what make people love their jobs. And my personal belief is that a job of a leader is to unleash the potential in all their employees, not just at work, but in their lives too. And you can't do that if all you care is about yourself.
That's right. I highlighted one line. You said, apologize when you need to, and sometimes even when you don't. And absolutely. I've been married for 17 years. I think I've adopted at least some of that. So I probably need to adopt it a little more. But
well, here's what it does. You know, I mean, I'm not a big fan of like, okay, I tell women this all the time because women tend to be apologized for everything, right? You know, you just say, oh yeah, right. You know, that I have this going on. Oh, I'm so sorry. And it diminishes the value of an apology. But I do think that, like, let's face it, like, we're all just giant children. And when we get backed in a corner, we don't want to come out. And just like we have to give our kids space to come out and when they make a mistake, unless, you know, we're just berating them, right? You have to give that space. And it's the same thing for your employees. And how you can do that is saying, you know what? I apologize for my role in this. And even if it's not your fault, right, we all still play a role. We can all do a better job in handling a tough conversation or making a decision. And so that's why I think it's really important to be like, hey, I want to just own my part in this as well. And it makes it safe for other people to do the same.
It's awesome, Carrie. Well, Carrie, you know, we'll wrap up here just in a moment. You know, I just wanted to say, you know, you spoke about some of your struggle in your life, even as early as childhood, and you've been open about that in your book. And I love your willingness to speak about that for folks that want to consume your book. Should I think we'll identify and can understand a lot of what you went through. And I just think it's impressive to see where you are now and how you presented this hand. This book is a handbook, right? And I like that, even the way that you structured it in that way, is a testament to your need to serve, right? And that's something that I think we should all focus on every day, serve others.
Thank you. I agree completely. What good is life if you're just serving yourselves?
That's right. Look, I found a quote that I thought kind of represented you. And I hope you agree that it's from Dolly Parton. It's amazing. I've never quoted Dolly Parton before. She said, find out who you are and then do it on purpose.
I love it. It's so good. And she's so amazing. And I agree completely. And do it on purpose and do it with purpose is the only thing that I would add.
I nailed it, Carrie.
You did.
Right. Well, Carrie, let's talk about the ownership mindset. Is the release date coming up here? Tell us about the release date.
October 17th. October 17th. It'll be out. It can be pre-ordered before then, and it can just be ordered after then. And it's on at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the major bookstore retailers.
And how about CarrieSiggins.com? Is it there?
Yeah, you can get it off of CarrieSiggins.com. I'm selling it through the carriers. So you can go to my website and it will get you to any place to be able to buy the book. But I really believe in supporting booksellers. I'm trying as much as I can to sell through independent booksellers. So my book tour, I'm really proud to be working with a lot of small bookstores in local communities as well. So it's been a lot of fun and learning about how to write, publish, and launch a book. Boy.
Yeah, that's fine. And then you can do another one.
Yeah, I already have the outline for my second one done, which my husband was like, are you kidding me? You haven't even launched this book and you are going to start writing your second one. I was like, no, I'm not going to start it yet. I'm going to get through the launch. But yes, my second book is going to be about the relationships that we have with work to find purpose and meaning. I love what I do. And I want every human being on this planet to feel that same sort of love for their work. My love for my work has made my life so much more enriched. It's created huge opportunities. And I feel good going home every night to my family. And we all deserve that. Okay. And so I want to write a book about how to be able to find that purpose and meaning as we explore our own relationships with work. And so I'm going to interview a couple hundred people to be able to get their stories to be able to share in this next book.
That's awesome. Well, Carrie, I'm grateful to know you. And I'm so appreciative of our friendship. And I'm glad you sent me your book.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. I can't wait to have you on my podcast too. And I really appreciate your support and Bic's support over the years. It's been an awesome partnership.
Thank you, Carrie, and great people of Stone Age. We love you all too. For our audience who's paying attention today, we really appreciate you. For more industry news, videos, webinars, and podcasts, visit BicMagazine.com. Remember, everybody, it's what we do together that counts.
Thank you for listening to Bic Magazine's Inside Industry Podcast. Log on to BicMagazine.com for industry news and resources. Bic Magazine's Inside Industry Podcast is brought to you by the Bic Alliance. Bic Alliance and its sister companies, Bic Magazine, Bic Recruiting, and IVS Investment Banking, help industrial businesses grow through marketing and sales, hiring the right people, and merger and acquisition services. Visit BicAlliance.com for more information.